Revolutions Per Minute is a weekly radio show from the New York City chapter of the Democratic Socialists of America, recorded live at WBAI 99.5 in Brooklyn every Tuesday at 5. RPM is about doing the work to build a democratic socialist future. Every week, hear the latest news, analysis, and organizing experience from the minds and hearts of activists fighting every day in NYC. Join the movement at socialists.nyc.
You're listening to Revolutions Per Minute on WBAI, a socialist radio show and podcast from members of the New York City Democratic Socialists of America. I'm Lee Zishi, and I use she and her pronouns. Today, we're going to be talking with DSA members Momita Ahmed and Kat Bresler, two of the co-founders of The People for Bernie Sanders. It's a very, very popular Facebook page with over 1.4 million likes, but they've been able to translate online organizing to actual boots on the ground organizing. So we're really excited to talk to them. But first, we have the headlines with Amy Wilson.
Hey, what's up, New York City? This is Amy Wilson for Revolutions Per Minute with your headlines for today, December 10th, 2019. All eyes on the UK this week as the country prepares for its general election on Thursday, December 12th. The Labour Party and its leader, Jeremy Corbyn, hope to unseat Conservative Boris Johnson, who has been serving as Prime Minister since July 2019. Major issues at hand in this election include the UK's relationship to the European Union in the wake of the Brexit vote of June 2016, and the future of the National Health Service, which is struggling to provide adequate care in the wake of ongoing austerity measures. Commentators and analysts from across the political spectrum believe this to be a critical election for the UK. Leftists in the United States and internationally have organized in support of the Labour Party and Corbyn. Across the channel, workers have mobilized in Paris, Bordeaux, Lyon, Marseille, and other French cities to reject President Emmanuel Macron's proposed changes to the country's pension plans. Transit workers, teachers, postal workers, dancers at the Paris Opera, and many others have gone out on strike, protesting what they regard as Macron's arrogant governing style and disregard for the people of France. Here in the United States, abortion access remains under siege, with the Supreme Court this week declining to hear an appeal by the ACLU on behalf of Kentucky's only remaining legal abortion clinic. The law in question, passed in 2017 under the administration of anti-abortion Governor Matt Bevin, requires abortion providers to show and describe ultrasound images and the sound of a fetal heartbeat to patients requesting an abortion. The ACLU challenged this law on First Amendment grounds, while abortion access advocates argue that requiring patients to hear fetal heartbeats and view ultrasound images is medically unnecessary and presents yet another barrier to those seeking to terminate unwanted pregnancies. Graduate students across the country continue to advocate for their rights as workers, demanding contracts that reflect fair pay, access to health care, stronger sexual harassment protections, and more. On December 3rd, the Harvard Graduate Student Union, affiliated with UAW, began their strike after over a year of negotiation with the university. Among other things, the HGSU is negotiating for coverage of 90% of dental insurance premiums and 65% of medical insurance premiums for covered student workers. Harvard University's endowment is estimated at $40.9 billion. On Monday, a group of graduate students at University of California, Santa Cruz began a wildcat strike, withholding their submissions of final grades to demand a cost of living adjustment in pay rates they say are much too low to be livable in Santa Cruz. The New York City chapter of Democratic Socialists of America added two more candidates to its 2020 slate this weekend when the NYC DSA Citywide Leadership Committee voted to approve endorsements for Zohran Mamdani and Samelis Lopez. Lopez and Mamdani joined four 2020 candidates in Brooklyn races who DSA endorsed this past September: Jabari Brisport, Boris Santos, Farah Souffrant, and Marcella Mitaines. Zohran Mamdani will run for State Assembly District 36 from Astoria, while Lopez competes in a crowded Democratic primary field for Congress from South Bronx District, New York 15. Workers of the world, unite, We have nothing to lose but our chains. I'm Amy Wilson for Revolutions Per Minute. Now back to Lee in the studio for this evening's show.
Our daily headlines are brought to you by The Thorn, an incredible weekly newsletter by New York City DSA Electoral Working Group covering local politics and radical activism. You can subscribe at thethorn.nyc. I'm Lee Zishi. I use she, her pronouns, and you're listening to Revolutions Per Minute on WBAI. Today, we're joined by Momita and Kat, two organizers behind the People for Bernie, Millennials for Bernie, and just all around really fierce grassroots activists. Thanks for being on the show, Momita and Kat.
So excited to be here.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us, Lee.
Yeah, no problem. And so we like to kind of start off with the show with kind of introducing how people got involved in DSA, kind of demystify socialism a little bit. Momita, starting with you, can you talk about when you joined DSA and why?
It's hard for me to really say because I've been a socialist before I even learned about DSA, but I will say that in 2014, I think, when Zephyr Teachout ran for office, I met folks like Kat Bresler and Charles Lenchner, who also identified as socialists, and they mentioned to me that DSA is an organization that shares a lot of my values and they do really great work and that I should join. And so I was hesitant at first, but after working alongside them and going to the Left Forum right after Bernie announced back in 2015, I decided to join officially as a member. And since then, I've been a member and helped the growth of DSA through the Bernie work that I've done with Kat and others.
And what about you, Kat?
I'd have to say that I, too, have a longer path with Democratic Socialists. Activism and socialist activism and left work that stems from, you know, where I was in college and things that I was getting involved in, like Occupy or anti-war work. And I think that probably started to pay actual dues in 2016 because friends all around me were pushing for more activity in the MPC, and that meant that more of us had to actually pay dues to be involved in the National Political Committee for a DSA. I think, though, you know, it really just being the most active or you can be is not the same way that Momita or you or I necessarily always engaged with activism. I think that the best way to get involved with DSA is to show up for your local meeting and just sit there and do the work. And sometimes it's the hardest part, honestly. I have a very tight-knit local chapter that I'm very active with, and I'm regularly being checked by my comrades, right? And that's the exercise in democratic socialism, I guess, right?
Yeah, we'll definitely talk more about, you know, all the online, or not, well, on the ground, how online organizing has transferred to on the ground organizing a little bit more. I kind of want to start with some of the history behind People for Bernie, which, you know, is this very, very popular Facebook page with over 1.4 million likes. Can you talk a little bit, Kat, we'll start with you, about how the People for Bernie was founded and kind of what's been happening, you know, since the 2015-2016 election as it's continued to grow and organize over different issues?
Well, you know, like Momita said, we had known each other from Zephyr Teachout's race, and Charles and I had known each other since Occupy, and I'd worked with Winnie a little bit during Occupy Sandy. I think that we came together loosely at first, not really having an identified mission more than we knew we had a skill set for organizing, and we knew that we had our platforms, and if we merged them and we started making viral content and also explanatory content, there was a real thirst for it on the internet, and folks wanted an option and organizing space on the internet around our leftist ideals, right? Things that are very, very common now. Fight for 15, Medicare for all, tuition-free college, were really, and we say it over and over again, really were radical concepts 5 years ago. People were shaming us for even saying such things. And now they're so common. But it was because folks really were thirsty for it, started working on it together, online and offline, and creating content that we could amplify, and vice versa, right? Content we were creating was used in the field to help support people to build out this movement. And as we helped create a decentralized organizing model where folks could have state pages or constituency group pages or Twitter handles or Instagrams, these things were used for folks to organize locally and also amplify each other's actions and model actions after other constituency groups or geographies. And I think that's really where we started out, 5 years ago. But it's turned into this other thing sometimes.
And Mamicha, is there anything you'd like to add? And maybe you can also talk a little bit about kind of the role that People for Bernie and Millennials for Bernie have kind of served in between these election years to amplify organizing?
Yeah, absolutely. I think what Kat said pretty much sums up like how People for Bernie initially got started. And so I'll just talk a little bit about Millennials for Bernie. So with People for Bernie, we did a lot of constituents. We decided that we needed to reach out to the various constituency groups and coalesce them around Bernie Sanders, starting with online efforts to identify activists and organizers from that constituency group. And there were African Americans for Bernie, there was Latinos for Bernie, there were all these other groups, Muslims for Bernie,
feminists for Bernie.
So I was like, we need a Millennials for Bernie, and that's kind of and the millennial voice is just so unique, and at that time especially memes and humor was so crucial to like getting the word out to millennials, because we weren't really engaging in politics the way that other groups were doing with community-based organizations or with national organizations doing issue and advocacy work. There wasn't really any organization specifically working on millennials other than like issue-based stuff like student debt, which is why I felt like there was an opportunity here. And that's why I invited my friends David and Robin, who I went to college with, and who I've been organizing in very like radical spaces with Black Lives Matter and the base and all of these like radical spaces doing radical organizing anyway. So we just decided, hey, like, why don't we start a page just like People for Bernie? And so that's what we did. And then we recruited people throughout the country who showed interest in our page and wanted to help out, wanted to donate memes, wanted to do events specifically to organize millennials. And certainly, like, our break came from an event that we helped organize in Bushwick because the fact that we existed helped facilitate that, because there were millennials in Bushwick who wanted to do this event, a screen printing T-shirt party for Bernie very early on. And so they reached out to us to amplify and to get as many people to the event as possible. And then, you know, we had the Guardian wanted to cover us, or a few press outlets that were very much interested in this narrative that millennials support Bernie and that they're already organizing when they've never done that kind of work before. And so that's how we took off. And so People for Bernie has sort of has acted as a guide to how to organize in that space. So they're sort of our parents. I don't want to say parents' company, but you know, but there are mom and dad, you know, for the effort that we started. And so we have a very close relationship with them. However, our admins are all millennials, and they're you know, not the same as the admins on People for Bernie. So yeah.
You're listening to Revolutions Per Minute on listener-sponsored WBAI in New York City, broadcasting at 99.5 FM and streaming on all your favorite podcast apps. You know, WBAI is listener-sponsored. We don't take any corporate money, which is how we're able to report on all the amazing organizing that New York City DSA is doing. So if you appreciate this kind of work, if you appreciate hearing from people like Momita and Kat, who are on the ground and online and organizing in all these amazing ways, you can become a buddy of RPM at, you can call 516-620-3602. Also, you know, if maybe you're more the millennial style and you like texting, you can text the letters WBAI to the number 41444. Again, you can text WBAI to 41444. I'm Lee Zishi, and today we're talking to Kat and Momita about how they've translated some of this amazing organizing on People for Bernie and Millennials for Bernie into on the ground, boots on the ground organizing. And, you know, recently Bernie had this really amazing moment in his campaign. Some people were counting him out, and we can, you know, talk a little later about how the media has counted him out from the beginning. But after he had a heart attack, you know, people were calling on him to quit the race. But he had this really amazing Bernie is Back rally in Queens with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. You were both there. Momita, could you kind of talk about what being at that rally in Queens was like?
Yeah, so for me, it was an incredible experience. I was one of the folks that helped the advance team procure over 300 volunteers to help with the rally. And I got to actually meet Bernie Sanders at the rally. So just watching my borough, my home, come out in such high numbers for the man just really warmed my heart and inspired me on a level that has never happened before, because I really care about the community work that I've been doing since on a local level. So that it really helped me as an organizer to see that there's such wide range of support from so many different communities in Queens. And I was lucky enough to be a part of the organizing effort. And I was lucky enough to connect the campaign with Anik Khan, who's a Bangladeshi rapper, and have a Bangladeshi rapper open the rally. It was just such a proud moment for me and my community and all of Queens. So, you know, that was one of the best Bernie rallies I've ever been to, and I've been to like a million of them. So,
what about you, Kat? What were you feeling that day?
Well, you know, it's really special for me to watch Momita get to see some of the, you know, fruit of her labor, right, in her own borough. Same for the Congress member Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, for her to watch them enjoy the space that they've helped to find on the left, right? Julia Salazar was there, you know, Jessica Ramos, Rafael Espinal, like so many community leaders that have been fighting for so long. And I remember a really powerful part for me during when Ocasio was on stage, she points to the high rises off to her right, and she says, you know, we need to stop prioritizing that housing and start prioritizing this housing. And we were closest to Queensbridge housing. And I thought that was really powerful. The people that were coming out on the streets to be just engaged in the activity. When you're on the street and you're being part of it, you're so far away from the stage, you're just really there to be part of a social conscious moment with everybody, right? You're thinking and feeling and breathing values together in a moment with, you know, 30,000 people, from people up on a bridge, you know, looking down. It's a really powerful experience that can't really be put into words, especially when it takes, you know, days for the venue to be locked down and all of the arrangements to be secured, and you know, hours for us to fill up the space, because, you know, when you're dealing with lines that are tens of thousands of people long, it takes hours to move them through a small, you know, narrow opening to a venue space. So
I would just like to add that since then, I mean, that rally really inspired many of our organizers that are doing organizing work for Bernie. We have been consistently doing canvases at the NYCHA houses over there to, you know, continue the relationship with Bernie and his housing platform. So it was a really impactful rally for Queens.
Yeah, and as somebody who does a lot of organizing around environmental issues, it was really amazing also to have him choose that location right in front of the Ravenswood power plant and kind of connect those issues of housing with environmental issues, you know, the way the Green New Deal does. I was kind of bummed out that I couldn't be there. I had to work my restaurant job later that night. But I did make a really awesome Green New Deal michelada, and I had it like up on the screen. Me and my sister were watching it. We're actually going to go really quickly to a quick clip from that rally of Bernie addressing the crowd.
Take a look around you and find someone you don't know. Maybe somebody doesn't look kind of like you. Are you willing to fight for that person as much as you're willing to fight for yourself? If you and millions of others are prepared to do that, not only will we win this election, but together we will transform this country.
So that was obviously a very powerful moment, and also a very powerful vision of organizing, not just to get Bernie elected, but, you know, beyond that. I was an organizer for Barack Obama in 2012 and kind of saw people come together to elect Obama or re-elect Obama at that point, but then really failed to see, you know, a movement that, at least from Obama's end, to kind of keep people active and keep people engaged in getting policies. So can you talk a little bit, I guess we'll start with you, Kat, about how people are mobilizing right now for Bernie?
I mean, I could literally spend hours doing that.
Some of your favorite ways.
I think it's not just my favorite ways. My favorite ways are making sure that people are connected in their geography, around their issues, and around their constituencies. That's where we came to this organizing from 5 years ago. What is most impactful is the fact that there are so many strong relationships that already exist from 4 and 5 years ago, that watching those relationships develop even more now and seeing how functional and how much effort people have all continued to put into those organizing relationships, and also understanding how to organize better. That's what I love, right? I love organizing teachers and labor around, you know, stronger contract issues and democracy in the workplace. But what's just been beautiful to watch is, you know, how many people I've known for so long that I can call over in New Hampshire and make sure that if I have four cars full of people, I know exactly where I'm going, and it isn't a hard navigation for us to do the organizing. I remember 4 and 5 years ago how difficult it was because these relationships weren't mapped out and people didn't know how to navigate the space. But now things are so identified and we are seasoned and we are strong. I am most pleased by how strong and functional we're all being.
Yeah, and I think that actually leads really well into my next question. Momita, do you see any differences between the Bernie's 2016 campaign and the 2020 campaign now? Do you think there were lessons that are learned that are now being put into practice?
Yeah, absolutely. I think they have a stronger, more organized campaign in terms of how they absorb volunteers into the work that needs to be done, and more communication between grassroots and the campaign. And I will just say this as an organizer in Queens. In 2015, when we started the Queens for Bernie effort, it was just 10 people. And now, and some of it is AOC, some of it is Tiffany Caban, but altogether, Queens is where it's happening now. We have so much going on, and to the point where we have efforts happening right here where I live in Jamaica in Southeast Queens for Bernie. Never in my mind would I have imagined a Bernie meeting in Jamaica in 2015. So clearly he has penetrated, his ideas have penetrated through the larger American diaspora and have, you know, reached and seeped into communities that have that weren't part of the fight with Bernie in his first run for office.
And Momita, what are like the main differences that you're seeing right now between Bernie's campaign and others, whether that's policy things or how they're organizing?
Yeah, one of the main differences is just that dialogue between grassroots and the campaign. For example, and part of it is because of the organizers who worked on the campaign in the past and new folks joining in and collaborating. But I'll give you one example because I'm all about examples. I can't really talk in broad terms. But like with the Bangladeshi community, which I am a part of, we have just formed our first tenants union for the first time ever. And it was a very historic moment for leftist organizers like me who go into the Bangladeshi space openly as a DSA member. So because the campaign is doing such a great job of because some of us like Kat and myself have built those relationships for a while, I was able to go to the campaign and pitch to them the idea that, hey, Bangladeshis are forming a tenants union. It's a big deal because oftentimes we deal with language barriers and fear of standing up for ourselves, and we don't have representation. We don't have a state assemblyman. We don't have a district leader. We don't have a congressperson who's Bangladeshi. So we have nobody to really talk about or amplify our successes or our issues, right? And Bernie is talking about this housing plan that supports tenants unions, and he's the only one, and that makes him different from all of the other candidates. So it would be great if you guys can amplify this effort. And the campaign was like, of course, that's amazing. We'll send someone right over when it's the next meeting. Can you guys translate our platform in Bengali for these tenants organizers to understand? And so we were able to work with the campaign in doing that, and they ended up doing a video around the tenants organizing. So that's one way I see the campaign doing it differently than any other candidates. I don't really see similar efforts from Buttigieg or Warren or anyone else. I don't see them paying attention to the local politics.
Centering grassroots organizers.
Yeah. Right, yeah.
And their work.
Yeah, and as a, somebody who kind of has a journalism background, who's like ended up in organizing, I think the way that the Bernie Sanders campaign, you know, officially has been using media to tell these stories, and just like you're saying, Kat, actually centered the organizing and how that relates very well with the policies that Bernie is putting forth on a national scale is just really, really amazing. Kat, what do you think right now is the biggest failure of how mainstream media is actually covering the presidential race?
Well, thanks for asking. I have opinions. this links exactly to what we were just talking about, too. Centering the organizers and the decentered organizing around the same things that they say are so radical. That's the media's problem. The media is like, oh, you know, these are radical ideas that we're espousing, or some other candidate has just the same thing. And the thing that they're not centering or amplifying or putting a spotlight on is the actual organizers that are doing the work intentionally with connection to the policies that they believe that a President Bernie Sanders is going to have cooperation with their organizers, like what Momita was just talking about in the Bengali community with the tennis organizing, but also, and not limited to, the literal thousands of people across this country running specifically because they believe that there is a movement for the policies just like Bernie Sanders. There's a movement of thousands of people running for office across this country, boldly saying, I endorse Senator Sanders, and also I'm running, or I have won, right? I think that often what gets washed away, even though people like Julia Salazar speak about it, and so does Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, that they were inspired by what happened 4 or 5 years ago. So that story, I feel like, often gets maybe mentioned when some of them get elected, but like, they continue to do that work. And the people that work to get them elected continue to do the work each and every day. So I think that's definitely part of what gets lost. I think, you know, there's just, like you were saying, the campaign is using very non-traditional ways of creating media, but so are the organizers, right? The organizers create their own videos on Instagram, on TikTok, are you know, interviewing people at the doors or out at colleges and creating media around that for their own local DSA Facebook pages or their local Bernie group, media platforms. So I think that's kind of getting lost in it, because I just don't feel, and I'm enough of an organizer in offline centered work that I feel like I would see that also if it were indicative of any other candidate or any other issue, or it's very unique to this movement and this presidential election.
You're listening to Revolutions Per Minute on listener-sponsored WBAI in New York City, broadcasting at 99.5 FM. And, you know, as Kat mentioned, Revolutions Per Minute is not one of those traditional media sources. We do everything we can. This entire show is around centering organizing and showing how people can get involved in that organizing. So if you appreciate that content, if you want to hear more about how people are organizing across New York City, please consider becoming a WBAI buddy for RPM. You can call 516-620-3602. Again, that number is 516-620-3602. 3602 to become a WBAI buddy for Revolutions Per Minute. You can also text the letters WBAI to 41444. You know, the only reason that we are on the air is because of listeners like you. And that's how we're able to report on things that none of the mainstream media is all the stuff that they're ignoring, all the really important on the ground organizing. Which leads me to my next question. Momita, how do you translate like this very successful viral online organizing to successful grassroots on the ground organizing?
Yeah. So I've started online, but then now I've moved on to very local grassroots organizing. And I think it's really important, and it takes years. It doesn't happen overnight, but I think it's very important, as Kat mentioned earlier, to be able to tell the story, tell your own grassroots story around whatever campaign or candidate that you care about, and doing it in your own way. Because those are the stories that inspire people. And so, you know, my journey with millennials started online, but it has moved on to organizing locally. And so it's very important to build your own voice on social media and in any media outlet that you can find, because the mainstream media aren't covering those stories. None of the mainstream media care that people are running for district leader, or that people are running for county committee, or that people are doing tenants organizing, or that people are, you know, high school students are walking out every week to fight desegregation. The media doesn't really report on it. I mean, local media to a degree, but most of the mainstream media, they just want to do punditry. So it's very important for us as organizers to show our work and be out there, because you never know who you will attract, who will be inspired. And then once you have that base, it gets easier to do the local organizing, because then you become self-sustaining in many ways. And I've noticed that on a personal capacity, that I never thought I would be organizing my own community, to be honest, because I wasn't that involved in the work that they do. But because as a Bangladeshi American woman doing the work I did for Bernie, my community members started noticing, and they started reaching out to me and asking me about things I'm involved in, and you know, and started asking me about Bernie, and started asking me about DSA, and started asking me about some of the socialist ideas that Bernie's talking about. And just like, it opens up so many dialogues and channels of communication. So it's very important to like build your online presence so that you could use it to support your on the ground work.
And Kat, could you maybe talk a little bit about which of Bernie's policy positions you're kind of most excited to organize around? Because I think one thing that's exciting about this campaign is that, you know, these aren't just policy positions that are on some page on the internet, you know, that like, oh, this is what I stand for. You know, this is all really rooted in grassroots organizing. And maybe talk a little bit how that relates to organizing that DSA is also doing already.
So when I came to this movement around this presidential campaign, it's 5 years ago, and I'm, you know, sitting in a Bronx classroom teaching kindergartners, and I really want to walk in after the election and tell each and every one of them they can go to college no matter what. That wasn't a thing in New York State. Fast forward to where I am now, after teaching in the Bronx for 4 years and getting injured in the line of duty, I wasn't promoted to having tenure. So that means I had to look for a new position, and that also means I lost my health care. So now I'm paying $700, more than $700 for my COBRA a month. Now, more than ever, Medicare for All is one of my top issues, because in a Medicare for All system, COBRA doesn't exist. And I'd be happy to have paid more or continue to pay more out of my check to make sure that there's a Medicare for All system and not be paying the $700 a month for health care. The issues go on, but for me, I also have been fighting really hard in New York State around expungements and legalization. This is an issue that I just am not going to stop until this country gets it right, because we are missing out on restorative justice for people that have been incarcerated and for an industry that's profiting off of their communities. And we are missing out on more sustainable revenue. And I think that it is an integral part of the Green New Deal as a energy and agricultural piece. So those are some of my largest hooks for why I do this day in and day out. But I mean, every day he gives us more and more reason when he talks about nationalizing the energy grid. It's not just one thing. It's everything. It's about fixing the system that was set up to not help any of us, but to empower the wealthy and well-connected.
Yeah, and if you want to hear about New York City DSA's plans to take over Con Edison and other corporate utilities, you should listen to some of our past episodes of Revolutions Per Minute on Simplecast or wherever he listens for podcasts. Momita, what about you? What kind of policy positions are you most excited to organize around?
I mean, healthcare is definitely one of them because I don't have it right now. I didn't, unfortunately, qualify for Medicaid this time around. So that's something I've been struggling with since losing it at 26 years old. So it's very personal. And my parents deal with it, too. Like, my mom lost her doctor of 16 years, whom she had after she was diagnosed with fibroidocytosis and went through surgery. And that doctor meant a lot to her and knew all of her history. So to lose her because of the limited network policy of some of these health insurers, it was very stressful for me. And so dealing with elderly parents or immigrants and have no way of really figuring out how to negotiate for themselves with the insurance companies, like, it's Medicare for All is definitely, like, hits home, very close to home. And of course, student debt. I mean, I'm lucky enough to have gone to a state college, so I don't have the massive amounts of student debt as my colleagues. But at the same time, like, you know, I think about if I ever were to go back to school, what are my options? And I see none. So, you know, those two things are really important to me. And housing, of course, because in New York City, there's such scarcity around affordable housing. And being able to buy a home, you know, I don't care about buying a home for myself, but I would like to give my parents some security and stability. And I just don't have the means to help them with that. And they don't have the means to help themselves. So I think those three things are really important to me. And I feel like if we can give Americans assurance that they don't have to worry about their health care, that they don't have to worry about getting an education, and that they don't have to worry about having a roof over their head, we can do so much more. We can work on so many other things. And, of course, like, all those three things are impacted by the larger effects of the climate crisis, right? So much of displacement happens in communities of color because of climate issues. Like, you know, we're looking at, I did like a little project, I forgot, if back in college, where I looked at 311 calls that are made in New York City, and most of them came from my community in Southeast Queens. So, and sorry, 311 calls that were related to environmental issues, whether it's like bad water, whatever it is. And it came from communities like mine. So in Southeast Queens, where there's mostly Latino, mostly African-American, mostly South Asian, low-income communities from. So environmental issue pretty much ties all of it together, right? And obviously income inequality and racial justice has a lot to do with it. I see all those three as being the big kahunas. They're like the intersectional overseeing issues that impact everybody in one way or another, whether it's housing, healthcare, or, you know, even student loans. But I'd say personally, those three are the Medicare for All, student debt, and housing is a big one right now that I'm struggling with.
So we have a little less than 15 minutes left on the show. So at this time, we'd love to hear from our listeners, and we're going to open up the phone lines. You can call and let us know what you're thinking at 212-209-2877. Again, that number is 212-209-2877. And before we take any listener calls, Momita, can you talk a little bit about how, you know, I mentioned earlier that, you know, I worked on the Obama campaign and then kind of saw that grassroots movement, you know, even if you can call it an official grassroots movement, kind of fizzle out once he became president and was reelected. So how do we build a movement that not only elects a democratic socialist president, but can get these kind of socialist policies passed?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's important for us to get involved locally. Some of us already give so much of our time into organizing and volunteering for campaigns, and then they lose, and then we're heartbroken and we're tired and burnt out. So I think it's time we also ourselves get involved. And some DSA members might even disagree with me on this, because we're talking about going into the Democratic Party and in some ways reforming it or taking it over, like the In-N-Out strategy, which I also understand, because we can't just do electoral. We have to do issue-based organizing, and that's just as important, because those two things, they go hand in hand, and they should not be separated. But I think part of it is understanding that framework, and then having a strategy and then implementing that strategy. And so I've been doing some work with a few folks to run people for county committee and to run people for district leader. I am running as a district leader candidate in my own district, because I realize my district, which is mostly Bangladeshi and Latino and African-American, we only have one Black district leader, and everybody else is white. So we don't have representation block by block. Literally, by block, we do not have representation. So it is really important to organize our neighbors and our block. And so if anyone's committed to that, I suggest running for things like county committee as DSA members. And I suggest people who run for district leader and things like that. And then also doing, issue-based organizing. I know that DSA EcoSoc folks reached out about doing something around a power plant legislation. I believe, Lee, you know more about this, but they're doing something in Jamaica around a Green New Deal and public power. And they reached out to me about organizing Bangladeshi community and building a coalition, which I'm super excited about, because we need to go into these different communities, not just during elections, but we need to go to them and talk about issues that will impact them. So it's going to take a lot of work. We don't have to overexert ourselves and do it in a short amount of time, but we do have to at least have the longer vision and plan and be able to take advantage of certain moments. Personally, I feel like because of the election and everything, right now is a really great time to organize everybody and not choose. That's kind of my line of thinking around how to organize a movement, because movements shouldn't be built around a human being. It should be built around, it could start with one, sure, but it should, there should be some sort of con- continuation. And what I love about People for Bernie and Millennials for Bernie and the Bernie grassroots and DSA is that we're so decentralized. And we really invest in empowering each other and these efforts, where if somebody runs for office, they have to come to us, not the other way around. And that's the kind of power shift, the shift in power that we need to focus on. How do we focus? How do we take the power away from elected officials and give it back to communities? How do we take the power away from corporate interests and give it back to communities? How we take the power away from real estate developers and give it back to homeowners and renters, right? Like, I think we have to really look at where we are and how we can distribute as much power as possible to the masses, to all of us. Yeah.
Yeah, if you have thoughts and you're a listener about the presidential election and how, you know, we can build movements around presidential elections and not just get sucked into, you know, the horse race politics of it all, you can give us a call at 212-209-2877. Again, that number is 212-209-2877. And Kat, as a teacher, you know, I saw that teachers are the most common profession that's donating to the Bernie Sanders campaign. Why do you think that is?
I think those closest to the pain are feeling that they need to be closer to the power. And when teachers pool their resources, they make a very loud voice. So for us, what happened was most of us that work in public schools are closest to the pain that's happening in our society, right? Those that are the weakest among us are often children or the elderly. And children are dealing with the most harsh scenarios of housing and food insecurity and healthcare insecurity and education insecurity, all of the essential services insecurity, right? The water, the exposure to heavy metals, like Momita was talking about, that happen in neglected communities are the communities that we teach in. So we naturally have to feel a lot more of what that insecurity feels like than I think most people do on a day-to-day basis. I do mini organizing every day, right? I have to organize people around the idea of doing mathematics or reading books or whatever it is. Not everybody spends their day organizing 30 people to do things. But that's a daily activity for teachers. So I think that experience is why we've chosen an organizer-in-chief who's prioritizing the insecurities and making sure that that's at the center of his campaign or their campaign, our campaign. That's why I think it's been there has been overwhelming support for the senator and his candidacy. I also think that when Momita and I first met, we were working on Zephyr Teach Out's campaign, but that was also on the heels of organizing work that I was doing in the education sector around the standardized testing and families' right to refuse. I think that that movement found a natural base here in the Bernie Sanders movement. And that also has a big impact on why there are so many teachers involved in this movement. We saw standardized testing being used to exploit children and turn the product of their labor into profit for billionaire corporations who sell books, who sell tests. And that, in a nutshell, is what's wrong with most of our system. that essential services have been connected to for-profit margins, and that has destabilized the essential service. That was a really long answer.
And quickly, before we have to go, I guess, Momita, if you want to take this, how can people get involved in the organizing that's happening both in Queens and across New York City?
DSA. I mean, look, like, if you are already comfortable talking about socialism and connecting the dots, and then get involved in some of these working groups that are fighting for environmental issues and Medicare for All and housing issues. I think DSA has been such a great ally in terms of, like, educating and coming up with these policies and legislation. And then if you're, you know, if you're on the fence about it, about being an open socialist, that's okay. DSA is still there to support that. But there's also so many organizing, so many other groups that are organizing in conjunction with the, in a coalition with organizations like DSA. I mean, I just formed my own organization with a few progressive socialist Bangladeshis called BOP, Bangladeshi Americans for Political Progress. And one of the things we're doing is showing the Bangladeshi community how they should do politics.
Well, thank you so much, and Kat and Momita, you've been listening to Revolutions Per Minute on WBAI. We'll catch you next week on Tuesday at 5 p.m.